Welcome to this audio issue of Best Buys, published and copyrighted by Porter & Company, all rights reserved. Please note that this recording was generated via AI and may contain minor transcription errors and pronunciation mistakes. Throughout this issue, I may reference charts, graphs, and imagery that can only be viewed on our website at porterandcompanyresearch.com. This issue was originally published on November 13, 2025. November 2025 Best Buys. An iconic consumer brand at a bargain price. Plus an energy drink maker joins the list. The knife slid through both of Aki Mensah's cheeks, pinning his mouth shut. It was the most crucial part of the ritual killing. This way, he'd be unable to scream for help. Unable to utter Untam, the universally recognized tribal safe word that would halt the killing. And most importantly, unable to curse the assassins' families or call down black magic on their heads. Silence was key. After the cheek pinning, the murder moved quickly. A crowd of Akia's royal relatives, all part of Ghana's ruling Akam clan, hoisted him onto an empty throne and drained his blood, baptizing the seed in preparation for the incoming chief. The old chief, Oforiatta, had died, and his rightful successor needed to make a blood offering before he could assume the throne. Aki Mensah's part in the traditional Wyrm ceremony, though, was over. The group dismembered him and deposited his body in a canal, where it wouldn't be found for another 5 months. As far as the Akiam clan was concerned, the case was closed. The British colonial government didn't feel the same way. By 1944, the year of the Akia Mensah murder, an increasingly large divide had grown between the tribal chieftains on Ghana's Gold Coast and the occupying British government, who'd been in charge since 1901. The English ruled high-handedly from a castle in the coastal city of Accra, imposing European-style law on an unruly collection of tribal states, and sending in a commission to iron out problems when they arose. A dismembered man in a canal was clearly a problem. To the Brits, anyway. Not so to Ghanaian Dr. J.B. Donkwa, the lawyer for the defense. Donkwa, himself an educated member of the Akim clan, was a champion of the old ways. He believed the native chiefs and farmers had a right to their own customs, up to and including the occasional ritual human sacrifice. He assembled a crack legal team, not so much to defend murder, but to show the Brits that they couldn't push his countrymen around. In a rather impressive show of denial, Donkwa vowed to prove there was strong evidence that the murder never was, and that Aki Mensah committed suicide by hanging himself. The Crown was not impressed by Donkwa's Mensah hanged himself speech. After a grueling sequence of appeals and counter-appeals, the strong arm of British law prevailed. Three of the murderers were executed and four sentenced to life in prison. Disgusted, Donkwa threatened, "If the white man is going to kill us, the white man will go back to his country." Less than a month after the 1947 guilty verdict, he started a grassroots political party, the United Gold Coast Convention, UGCC, to fight for the rights of native chiefs and farmers. By then, the farmers especially needed a champion. In return for the Crown's protection, the British exploited Ghana's lucrative cocoa farms, and in Donkwa's view, that just couldn't go on. Magic beans. By the 1930s, chocolate was big business for big-name companies like Mars and Cadbury. And the lucky English, as rulers of Ghana, had a corner on the world's single largest exporter of cocoa beans. They bought cocoa at rock-bottom prices from the small farmers on the Ghana coast, shipped it overseas, and sold it to fancy chocolate companies at an exorbitant markup, all of which went to the English, of course. By the time Donkwa came on the scene, cocoa had become a lightning rod for the conflict between the civilized colonials and the unlettered natives. Donkwa and his fellow agitators felt that the native farmers weren't getting a fair shake and that they should be able to sell their own cocoa overseas and pocket the markup. The English colonists, and Big Chocolate, strongly disagreed. The standoff got so bad that at several points in the 1930s, the farmers went on strike and burned huge swaths of cocoa plants rather than participate in the global cocoa industry. This was not when hot chocolate was invented, by the way. The most impressive of these strikes, the 1937-8 cocoa holdup, went on for 8 months and pushed world cocoa sales down as much as 90%, egged on by Donkwa. The English, as was their wont, sent in a commission, the Knoll Commission, this time, to investigate. It was Mr. William Knoll's studied opinion that the English should allow the Gold Coast farmers to form their own cocoa marketing board, which would permit them to set their own prices for cocoa beans, thus diffusing the tension. After a few years of negotiations, in 1947 the Cocoa Marketing Board was officially launched, seemingly a political victory for Donkwa and his newly formed UGCC party. Really, though, it was a victory only on paper. The board was ostensibly run by the people, but before long, the uneducated cocoa farmers got pushed out. The main folks with a say were elite city-dwelling natives. Chief among these city slickers was Kwame Nkrumah, who would end up running, and winning, the election to become Ghana's first prime minister when the country finally gained independence from Britain in 1958. Donkwa, seeing the native chiefs and farmers still weren't getting a fair piece of the chocolate bar, protested. He tried setting up several rival farmers-only cocoa marketing boards, but couldn't get traction. As a last-ditch effort, he ran against Nkrumah in Ghana's first election, and lost. And a few years later, in 1965, he was thrown into Ansawam prison on trumped-up charges and died of a heart attack. That's the official story, anyway. Bored to tears. With the formidable Donkwa out of the way, the ancient voices of the chieftains grew fainter. The newly formed Ghanaian government, and of course, the increasingly urban-composed cocoa marketing board, remained firmly controlled by educated city elites. As for the small cocoa farmers, they got the short end of the Tutsi roll once more. As one Ghanaian newspaper columnist lamented, "The lamp of the cocoa farmers has been extinguished, and people still do what they like with the cocoa farmers' money." To this day, Ghana's farmers still don't have a say in the price of their chocolate. Ghana is currently the only country where the state controls the entire volume of its exports. Every year, the government-run Cocoa Marketing Board, which has gone through a few iterations and is now known as Cocobod, sets the prices for cocoa at the beginning of the year and farmers are forced to comply. Cocobod is a mercurial, and frequently corrupt, master. From its very earliest days, not long after the British Knoll Commission first suggested it, Cocobod butted in with city boy agricultural recommendations that sounded good on paper, but didn't work well for real-life cocoa farmers. As time went on, Cocobod became the unwelcome homeowners association of cocoa farmers. Its ham-handed dictates continued, and as political alliances swirled and shifted, it frequently diverted funds that were supposed to go toward fertilizer and farm improvements, instead lining the pockets of government cronies. All that drama factors directly into chocolate prices every year, because almost one-fifth of the world's raw cocoa still comes directly from Ghana, and is still dictated by this draconian, secretive, pseudo-colonial chocolate monopoly. Every chocolate bar you buy at the grocery store might as well have Cocobod stamped on it in tiny letters. Over the past several years, for instance, cocoa production took a drastic dip, a 40% decline over the five-year period from 2020 to 2025, due to an extended episode of Cocobod skullduggery around fertilizer. As Cocobod itself admitted in a press release, hundreds of tons of fertilizer intended for Ghana's cocoa farms was lost, stolen, or sold on the black market for political purposes, which left farms vulnerable to the swollen shoot virus. By 2023, the mealybugs that carried the disease had devastated around 40% of Ghana's active cocoa farms, causing a ripple effect of imitation chocolate that you may have noticed on the labels of your Halloween candies. That, in turn, has caused chocolate prices to rise, depressing many major candy companies. The good news is that this depression, as always, is temporary. Cocobod giveth and Cocobod taketh away. The multi-billion dollar cocoa industry is cyclical, and these price spikes are typically short. High prices spur reinvestment, replanting, and government stabilization efforts, leading to a supply rebound within a couple of years. In the meantime, the dip gives us an opportunity to buy into one of the world's best chocolate manufacturers at an attractive price point. If you're not already a subscriber to Best Buys, click here to learn more. Or call our customer care team at 888-610-8895, or internationally at +1-443-815-4447, for more information on getting access to this publication. 1. The Hershey Company, NYSE, HSY shares of this famous chocolate maker have fallen to a price that makes them quite appealing at the moment, so we have added the Hershey Company, NYSE, HSY, to this month's Best Buys. We have also added Celsius Holdings, NASDAQ, sell. We remain bullish on both Eli Lilly, up 21% since we recommended shares in June, and British American Tobacco, up 40% since March, which both remain below the buy-up-to price, but believe Hershey and Celsius are currently at a more compelling price. Why we recommended Hershey? Founded in 1894, Hershey owns a portfolio of some of the most iconic candy brands of all time, including Hershey's Bars, Hershey's Kisses, Reese's Peanut Butter Cups, Kit Kat, Twizzlers, and Almond Joy. The enduring value of these and other brands allows it to sell more candy every year, at ever-increasing prices. As a result, Hershey has consistently grown revenue, earned hefty profit margins, and returned a steady and growing share of profits to shareholders through dividends and share buybacks. Since Porter first recommended Hershey in 2007, the company has grown revenue 127% or 4.9% annually. However, what is more impressive is that during this period, Hershey's earnings per share, EPS, increased a phenomenal 1,040% or 15.4% annually. Hershey shares are down 9% from when we recommended them at $185 in April 2024. Skyrocketing cocoa prices contributed to Hershey's share price decline as the cost of this key ingredient soared above $10,000 per metric ton. It has since declined a bit, but the share price has yet to recover. Why Hershey is a best buy? Hershey beat expectations across the board in its Q3 earnings report on October 30th, with EPS of $1.30, 24 cents ahead of expectations, and revenue of $3.18 billion, $60 million better than analyst estimates. The notable takeaway from the Q3 report was that Hershey appears to have regained its pricing power, notching a 6% increase in prices while volumes remained steady. The company reported strong results across all major segments, including a 5% increase in North American confectionery sales, a 10% increase in North American salty snacks, and 12% growth in international revenue. Margins remain tight due to the high cocoa prices locked in via this year's hedging program, with gross margins down 8.5 percentage points year-over-year to 31.8%. However, the good news is that cocoa prices have dropped by over 50% from a peak of $12,800 per ton last December to $6,200 currently. Based on the strength of its latest results and lower costs from falling cocoa prices, Hershey raised its 2025 guidance to 3% sales growth, up from 2% previously. The company expects to earn $5.95 per share this year, and we expect this will be the low point in Hershey's earnings going forward. With revenue on track to reach $12 billion next year, that puts our estimate of normalized net income at between $1.8 billion to $2.4 billion. At a current market capitalization of $35 billion, that puts Hershey's forward P/E ratio at between 15x and 19x. That's a compelling bargain for one of the most iconic brands of all time. And yet, despite solid operating results and brighter future prospects from falling cocoa prices, investors sold Hershey shares following its Q3 report. We view this as an attractive buying opportunity. Action to take: buy the Hershey, NYSE, HSY, up to $200 per share. 2. Celsius Holdings, NASDAQ, sell. We are also adding Celsius Holdings, NASDAQ, sell, owner of the Celsius brand of energy drinks, to our best buys this month. Why we recommended Celsius? The company sells what it calls better-for-you energy drinks. The product formula contains mostly natural ingredients and doesn't contain the high sugar content, artificial colors, flavors, and chemical preservatives found in most energy drinks. But these natural ingredients pack a punch, delivering 200 milligrams, mg, of caffeine per 12-ounce serving. That's roughly 75% more than the 114 milligrams of caffeine in the same serving of Red Bull and 120 milligrams for Monster, currently the top two best-selling energy drinks. It's also more than the 123 milligrams of caffeine found in the average 12-ounce cup of coffee. Celsius is the fastest-growing energy drink brand in the U.S. market, with 173% year-on-year growth in Q3 2025. A major driver of this growth has come from two significant acquisitions this year, including the purchase of Alani Nu in April followed by the Rockstar Energy brand in August. The company now owns 21% of the energy drink market, up from just 4.5% in 2023. That makes it the third largest energy drink brand, behind Monster Beverage, MNST, at 27% and Red Bull at 35%. Celsius market share gains have come at the expense of those two larger rivals, whose combined market share has dropped from 76% in 2024 to just 62% currently. The energy drink market is no longer a duopoly, as Celsius rapidly closes the ranks with these former titans. Consumers are flocking toward its better-for-you drinks made with more natural ingredients and fewer artificial preservatives, colors, and sweeteners. This shift in consumer preferences toward cleaner ingredients has been building for the last couple of decades, and it's one we expect will continue. Why Celsius is a best buy? Shares of Celsius dropped by over 25% following its Q3 earnings report on November 6, primarily driven by a $247 million charge from an early termination of a distribution contract for Alani Nu. Celsius is bringing Alani Nu into its distribution agreement with PepsiCo, and it had to pay a one-time fee to cancel the company's existing agreement. However, the important thing to note is that PepsiCo agreed to pay this fee. So even though Celsius officially recorded the expense on its net income statement, it didn't pay any cash. Looking ahead, Celsius may incur some additional costs related to its integration of Alani Nu. It may also temporarily lose sales from Alani Nu as the company moves from its existing distributor over to PepsiCo. But in the long run, tapping into PepsiCo's world-class distribution system is one of the greatest assets a drink company can possibly have. For long-term investors, The overreaction to the temporary hiccups from integrating Alani Nu into the business presents a tremendous opportunity. Celsius is on track to generate $3.2 billion in sales next year. With a current market capitalization of $11.4 billion, it trades at just 3.6x next year's sales. For comparison, that's more than 50% cheaper than its next closest competitor, Monster Beverage, MNST, which trades at 7.9x sales. Action to take: buy Celsius Holdings, NASDAQ, sell, up to $50 per share. 3. Mitsui & Company, OTC. Mitsui Japanese holding firm Mitsui & Company, OTC, Mitsui, which was added to the complete investor portfolio only last month, offers one of the most attractive long-term growth opportunities in today's market. Why we recommended Mitsui & Company? Mitsui & Company is a large global Japanese general trading company that conducts a wide range of activities including trading, investment, project development, and financing. The company operates in areas such as mineral resources, energy, infrastructure, machinery, chemicals, food, and healthcare. At its core, Mitsui has perfected a system that ingeniously leverages public institutions and their financing to socialize the costs of its capital and its risk-taking while channeling the resulting profits into its own coffers. This mechanism, honed over generations, allows Mitsui to access near unlimited funding at negligible rates and to deploy it into high-return assets with minimal personal exposure. It's a model of remarkable efficiency, enabling consistent compounding that few Western conglomerates can match, and it underscores why Mitsui & Company generates returns on invested capital, ROIC, of 15%, far above global averages, while maintaining low overhead and capex. To grasp this strategy, consider the absurdity of the scale. Companies like Mitsui, with $106.7 billion in assets, borrow at rates as low as 0.4%, effectively free money when inflation hovers around 2%. This isn't market magic, it's the deliberate outcome of Japan's intertwined public-private ecosystem. Layer on state-backed institutions like Japan Bank for International Cooperation, UBIC, a bank fully owned by the government with $150 billion in assets. ABA Preberg provides low-interest loans and guarantees for overseas projects, often at rates below 1%, covering up to 70% of political and commercial risks. This socializes potential losses. Taxpayers bear the brunt if deals sour, while Mitsui captures the upside. Why Mitsui & Company is a best buy? As global investors flee fiat currencies, seeking refuge in gold, Bitcoin, or real estate, the value of Mitsui & Company, which masters this conversion, is poised to soar. This is not mere speculation. It is the timeless mechanism by which the intellectual elite of business preserve and multiply wealth, a strategy Warren Buffett has championed throughout his career. True wealth accrues not from speculation but from owning undervalued claims on productive assets, patiently unlocking their potential. This is precisely how the very rich stay rich and grow richer, by acquiring dollars of hard assets for dimes, using mechanisms that shield them from volatility while compounding quietly. Mitsui, for instance, officially trades at a price-to-book, PB, ratio of about 1.0x, meaning $1 of assets for $1 of price. But our sum-of-the-parts analysis suggests an intrinsic value 1.4x higher, or 40 cents of upside per dollar invested. This isn't just a bargain. It's a vehicle for transforming worthless paper credit into hard assets worldwide, managed by masters of long-term wealth preservation. Mitsui & Company's $71 billion market cap lags a $100.7 billion sum of the parts valuation. But unlike 1950s cigar butts, Mitsui has much more than one puff left to give. It compounds at 12% to 15% ROIC via capital light stakes, turning paper discounts into perpetual wealth. If you own this stock, never, ever sell it. Action to take: buy Mitsui & Company, OTC, Mitsui, up to $550 per share. Every month, we highlight three current portfolio picks that are at an attractive buy point, and we include those with the best buying opportunity as our best buys. While we regularly alternate which companies we list as our best buys, removing a stock from the list does not necessarily mean we no longer recommend it to its buy-up to price. It's only that the new picks present an even more compelling investment opportunity. Porter & Company, Stevenson, Maryland. Thank you for being a paid subscriber to Porter & Company. We hope you enjoyed this audio issue.